The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number three of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hines. I'm John Wilkerson. We head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline as we get to say hello to our good friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. A fantastic follow on Twitter at McClain_on_NFL. And I don't think there's any question with the tough news there was about Justin Verlander, how he's going to need Tommy John surgery. Has Dusty Baker called you out of the bullpen yet, John?
I don't think so. And as bad as they're playing, they could do worse. I'm guessing they could do worse than me, because even though they won last night, they're limping along. You know, Gerrit Cole left after last year to go to the Yankees. Verlander went down the first game. They lost their closer for the season, Roberto Osuna. Just about every player from Alex Bregman to Michael Brantley to George Springer spent time on the injured list, and it's a good thing that mediocrity is awarded this season, because they'll get in the playoffs. And people say, well, boy, anything can happen in a two out of three series. And I say, yeah, it can, but it's not going to be the Astros that do it, because more than likely they're going to have to play the A's, their nemesis this season, a team they have tormented in recent seasons. So I'm ready after this short season to get the playoffs going and see how it turns out.
Well, it's amazing that we are to the end of the regular season with this Sunday for baseball, and it is amazing that when you look at how the Marlins had to shut things down, and then also the Cardinals, that pretty much everybody's going to be right around the same place when it comes to games played. As far as the Texans, this is just a tough stretch for Houston fans. An 0-2 start, they fell 33-16 to the Ravens. How much of these first two results are the Texans struggling, and how much of it is that you probably couldn't have faced two better teams in the AFC to open a season?
Well, they couldn't. Those are my number one and two teams in my rankings, and they have been since before the season. But their offense has not played as well as I thought. Now, obviously, Baltimore and Kansas City have good defenses, or they wouldn't have gone 14-2 and 12-4 and won the Super Bowl last year. But we thought the offense would be better. Defense is not as good, and it's actually played better than I thought against Baltimore, although the statistics and the score don't reflect it, because they gave up 153 yards rushing in the fourth quarter. But now they go to Pittsburgh. Steelers have been fortunate to play two dogs. They played at the Giants. They hosted the Broncos, knocked out quarterback Drew Lock, still struggled to win. But the Steelers should win, and the Texans should start 0-3 the way I picked them in August. And then they play the game that is going to be telling, because before the season, Minnesota, the fourth game, looked really tough. And the Vikings, like the Texans and the Eagles, are playoff teams that have started 0-2. So when the Vikings come in here, and an interesting note about that game, it'd be all three head coaches in Texans history will be in the stadium, Gary Kubiak and Dom Capers for the Vikings, and, of course, Bill O'Brien. And I will be writing about that next week. But they've got to be able to win that game, come back and beat Jacksonville here. That would make them 2-3. And they didn't have two tough ones, go to Tennessee and host Green Bay. And I picked them to beat Green Bay before the season. Now I'm trying to figure out if they can come within 20 based on the way the Packers have started with 85 points in two games.
John, I grew up watching Gale Sayers. I thought he was brilliant. He's the youngest player ever inducted into the Football Hall of Fame at 34 years old. He passes away. Your thoughts on Gale Sayers?
It should have been illegal, but somehow George Halas was able to draft Gale Sayers, the Kansas Comet, and Dick Butkus in the first round in 1965. Both are in the Hall of Fame and among the greatest in the league at what they did. It's no telling what Sayers would have accomplished if he hadn't had his knee blown out on a hit by 49ers corner Kermit Alexander. And back then, there was no such thing as arthroscopic surgery. and they had to have full surgery to take 8 or 9 months to come back. And when he came back, he was never the same. He had one more season, which I think he rushed for 1,012 yards. Thing about Gale Sayers, he and Barry Sanders are the greatest open field runners I've ever seen. He was a great kickoff returner. As a rookie, he had 6 touchdowns in one game. He also was a great receiver. But you talk about elusive. Go on YouTube and watch video of him making people miss when he's running in the mud at Wrigley Field and later at Soldier Field, in which the surface was terrible. And he was something else, and he was a class act. I met him, was around him quite a bit in Canton when I go back every year for the Hall of Fame. And I want to tell you, since you brought this up, because it's a great story, it's going to take me a minute, so bear with me. My favorite all-time football movie was
Brian Song.
Brian Song, the original, with Billy Dee Williams playing Gale Sayers and James Caan, who nobody knew at the time, playing Brian Piccolo. And they were rookies, and George Halas was the coach, and he roomed them together, black and white. They became great fans. Piccolo was really outgoing, a joker, practical joker, pull pranks. Sayers was very, very quiet. Had a lot of charisma, but it was a quiet charisma. And Piccolo had to work hard for everything he got, where Sayers worked hard, but it all came so naturally. And so Piccolo got cancer. And this was the first movie that I can remember in which a person, and we've seen a million since because of Brian Song, who got a disease and died. You know, Love Story came along right about that time, and they made money, so they did a lot. Anyway, in the movie, when Brian Piccolo dies, Gale Sayers asked Jack Warden, the coach, if he can tell the team. And they said yes, and Gale Sayers went in there, and Billy Dee Williams, and he went in and he addressed the team, said, "Brian is dead. I love Brian. He was my best friend." Very sad in the movie. Flash forward to the Hall of Fame. Every Friday before the Hall of Fame induction, there's a luncheon at a country club in Canton. And you can't get in that luncheon unless you're a player. And for the longest time, if you're on the selection committee like me, you could get in there. And it was an induction for the new class. They couldn't talk during the open bar, couldn't talk during the luncheon. And the luncheon would have different players saying different things, and it would end with Deacon Jones and Ray Nitschke making the last 2 speeches. And one year, Ray died in the off season. And the next year at that luncheon, they had a video come down on Ray Nitschke during the luncheon, and it showed his induction speech at the end, and they said from that point on, that luncheon would be the Ray Nitschke Memorial Luncheon. And Gale Sayers got up, and he walked to the front of the room, and he said, "Ray's dead. Ray's my best friend." And he said the same thing he said about Brian Piccolo in the movie. And you talk about there wasn't a dry eye in the house. I looked around, all these greatest coaches and players in history wiping their eyes and their glasses and sniffling. And that's one of the greatest, most emotional moments I've ever had in my 45 years in this business.
Wow. Wow. John, I want to ask you about what happened with Tyrod Taylor, Chargers quarterback. Team doctor is going to give him an injection for his cracked ribs and punctures his lung. Dan Orlovsky said that he had a few of those shots, and the doctor warned him it might happen. But my goodness, I don't know that I've heard of such a thing.
It's funny Orlovsky would say that, because if it happened to him, nobody would have noticed. I've never heard of that either, and I wouldn't let that doctor give me a shot. I can tell you that. I hate shots enough as it is. And players get shots like that into their ribs and knees and other parts of their body and have throughout history, but I've never heard of one having to be rushed to the hospital and not be able to play because a lung was punctured. And that gives me the creeps, the heebie-jeebies just thinking about it. And fortunately, it's not bad. It's going to cost him to lose another game, miss a game. And by the time he's healthy, I'm guessing he ain't getting his job back, because Justin Herbert looked pretty darn good against the Chiefs and almost helped them win before losing in overtime.
Yeah, John, I was about to go straight from that to say, should we just call him Wally Pipp as opposed to Tyrod Taylor?
Anthony Lynn, the coach, has been adamant since the draft, and they signed Taylor. He is the starting quarterback. If you watch Hard Knocks, Tyrod Taylor's a great guy, hard worker, sets a great example, like another coach on the field. Everybody loves Tyrod Taylor. But there's a reason he keeps getting replaced as the starting quarterback, because he's not real good. And Justin Herbert's the fourth overall pick, I believe, and the sooner he plays, the better off the Chargers will be, because he'll continue to get better. But I think Lynn, being a former player, that he is more likely to make sure a player doesn't lose his job because of an injury. And another thing about a coach making a change, he may believe it, but he's got to make sure the players know it. You know, he can't just be something he feels. If you want to set an example and you want your players to buy into the rookie, they got to know it's time to play the rookie. And I think, like in Kansas City in 17, when Mahomes was on the bench all year and he came in, played the last game for Alex Smith and looked great, they knew it was time for a change. And I can't imagine, after watching Herbert almost pull that one out, that the Chargers veterans wouldn't be wanting him in the lineup.
That's John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. We've got more with John coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The Sports Animal and Alexa are best friends. Just tell her, Alexa, enable the 99.1 The Sports Animal skill.
Skill enabled.
Then anytime you want immediate Tennessee sports info, say, Alexa, play 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Okay, playing 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. John, how much did you enjoy the Sunday night showdown between Seattle and New England?
I thought it was amazing that Russell Wilson threw five touchdown passes and they had to make a clutch stop on the last play of the game on 1 yard line with Cam Newton keeping the ball. And it was a great game. Now the Monday night game between Kansas City and Baltimore, whew, that could be a preview of the AFC Championship game. But what we saw from the Patriots, Cam Newton showed when he's healthy, he can play. He threw for 397 yards, ran for two touchdowns. He has four touchdowns rushing in the two games. But I would think right now people in Buffalo are so excited because they've beaten the Jets and Dolphins. Right now, I would pick the Patriots, as I did before the season, because I feel a lot better about Bill Belichick, but also about Newton as long as he's staying healthy. Josh Allen is playing great for the Bills, but he's beaten two of the worst teams in the NFL. Let's see how the Bills do when they play a better team.
John, what is your take on the number of injuries we've seen? Seven torn ACLs in week two. A lot of star power is out of the league. Do you think that has anything to do with the lack of some of the preseason work, or is this just a coincidence?
I think it has to do with everything. Go back to 2011 when the NFL had a lockout because they were trying to negotiate a new collective bargaining agreement and players couldn't talk to coaches. They had to work out on their own. Now, they tried to get together and do all the things that you're supposed to do and go to the health club and all that. But you always have to get in football shape. Look at what Jadeveon Clowney's doing in Tennessee. You know, he's struggling. He'll get better because he's got to get in football shape after not playing since last season and having injuries last season. So in 2011, they documented all the injuries they had, what kind of injuries they had, and compared it to other season, and it was more. And so this doesn't surprise me at all. I just feel bad for a team like the 49ers. They've lost their best pass rusher. They've lost a former number two pick in the draft. They've lost their running back who went 80 yards on the first play Sunday. And they've lost Jimmy Garoppolo for two or three games. They don't know. I think it was a sprained ankle. So they have been hit hard.
Do the 49ers have a legitimate complaint about the turf at MetLife Stadium? And have you heard that before, other than just coming from San Francisco?
No, I've not heard that before. And the Giants played there. The Steelers played there. They had no complaints. Now, the problem with the Niners, they're playing there 2 weeks in a row. They got to go back. So when they didn't go back to Santa Clara, they went down to the Greenbrier in West Virginia, and they stayed there this week. And so we'll see. If there's another rash of injuries, we'll see. I know here at Reliant Stadium, when it opened as Reliant Stadium, it's NRG Stadium now, they had this system where they had trays of grass that were brought in, put down, and then a steamroller would go over them, but there were still some creases. And they had injuries, but you know what? It wasn't any more injuries than others. It's just people would freak out, and they changed it. Now, when they have an injury, a torn ACL, nobody blames it on the turf. But we'll see. If it happens to the 49ers again, they may never go back there.
John, the NFL was considering changing rules for teams that are looking to come back and perhaps adopting something besides the onside kick, since they changed the rules and how you can line up and execute them. It's become almost nearly impossible, but I guess that's not true if you're playing the Atlanta Falcons, right?
You can't legislate brains. You can't legislate bad coaching. When I watched that game and that miraculous comeback by Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, and I was hoping they'd lose because now they're playing at Seattle and they could have started 0-3 like the Texans. But when I saw them do what they call a watermelon kick and the ball's spinning along and the Falcons are right on top of it, watching it to try to go 10 yards, and everybody's thinking, jump on the ball. And I'm surprised they didn't fire their special teams coach. That's one of the biggest gaffes I've ever seen. You're basically saying your players, they're numbskulls if they didn't know they could jump on that ball, and it cost them a game. I felt bad for Matt Ryan, and the Falcons are averaging 32 points a game. They ought to be 2-0 or 1-1 with those kind of stats, but they're giving up 39. And if there was a timeout chair for being nincompoops, the special teams, the so-called hands. You know what? I just thought of this. They got the hands team, but they next time they need a brains team.
Yeah, that they do. Let's go to the phones and get a call from David, who joins us. Hello, David. How are you?
Doing well. Hope you all are doing just fine.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I got three quick questions. It refers to the Green Bay Packers. Wanted to get you all's opinion on Kenny Clark and the effect that his absence is having on Green Bay's defense. Number two, Rodgers' future with the Packers. And number three, what do you make of Love's absence on the active roster?
Love
can't play. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. First of all, Kenny Clark, when they keep scoring points like they have, 85 points, it doesn't matter who's playing on defense. Yes, it'll hurt him, but they've got depth on that team, as they've proven with receivers. Think about all the whining and crying by the media, and I was guilty, by Packers fans everywhere. Why could they not get Rodgers another receiver? How in the world was he going to complete passes with only Devontae Adams? They're trying to run him out of town. That's why they drafted Jordan Love in the first round, so they can get rid of Rodgers, because they don't give him any receivers. Think of how lopsided those scores had been if they had given him receivers. And it looks to me like they drafted Jordan Love just to light a fire under him, because he's off to as good a start as he's ever had in his career, whether it's because they drafted Love or what, but it doesn't matter who he's got out there. Adams, of course, is one of the best, but he has been fabulous. They have been fabulous, and they're right there with Baltimore and Kansas City, the three best teams in the league. Seattle, to me, is close behind.
Getting back to the Falcons for just a quick minute, at the start of the season, we were talking about the coaches that sit on the hottest seat, and it just looks like absolutely nobody in regards to the New York Jets is happy. Players, coaches, administrators, you name it. So we thought Adam Gase might be the one that starts the season on the hottest seat. Does this push Dan Quinn to the front of that list?
Well, I would think at the start of the season, people would have said Doug Marrone in Jacksonville.
Yes.
Because Doug has been around a while. They had the great season in 2017, haven't done squat in 18 and 19. But Doug got control of personnel. And so he weeded out players that he didn't think fit the culture or were buying into what he was selling. And they're one of the biggest surprises in the league. And I'm really happy for Marone because I like the guy. And Adam Gase is not long for the Jets world. And the thing is, this sounds terrible, but I would not fire him during the season. Let him play it out. Let him be really bad because they're loaded with draft choices and it means a higher pick. And it would be a great way for a new coach to come in there. And as far as Dan Quinn, Falcons got off to a slow start last year. They finished well. They kept him. The media likes Dan Quinn. The fans like him. The players, everybody respects him. And that makes it easier for an owner to keep a coach. But I'll bet you if they don't make the playoffs in a division in which Tampa's nothing special so far, the Saints, it was painful watching Breeze try to come back at Las Vegas. I would think the Falcons could be in the race, and I think if they don't make the playoffs, Dan Quinn's going to be fired, and he'll end up as a defensive coordinator somewhere.
What are your thoughts on Drew Brees? He hasn't been quite as sharp as he usually has been. I know a lot of people are ready to write him off. What do you think?
I don't think you can write him off because he's too smart. He's accurate. Problem is he can't throw the ball down the field like he used to, but he also didn't have Michael Thomas, best receiver in the NFL. I saw a stat that he's thrown 68 passes, and only 10 have been like 10 or more yards, and he's completed two. No, seven have been for more than 10 yards in the air, and he's completed two. That is scary, but I don't feel good right now after watching that game, and it was painful. And I know it was painful to you, but I picked them to win the Super Bowl. And I felt good about it after they beat the Bucs. So you can't write off any player, any team after two games. There's too many instances where people started slow. But on the other hand, how many quarterbacks do we have as a barometer who played into the 40s like Brady and Breeze, Warren Moon? I don't know if Favre hit 40 or not, but it's not a big list. It's going to be, but Breeze has got to play better, and he needs Michael Thomas back.
What are you working on this week, John?
I'm working on a column tomorrow about J.J. and T.J. Watt and the Watt brothers who are going to make history on Sunday in Pittsburgh. They will be only the second time since 1927 three brothers will have played in the same game. Interestingly, it happened with the Edmonds brothers last year when the Steelers and Bills played, and that was the first time since 1927 when three brothers played on the same Duluth team. Thank you very much for asking.
Well, sure do appreciate it, John. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
John and Jimmy, thank you guys very much, as always, and stay safe.
Thank you.
You as well. That's John McClain of the Houston Chronicle joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break. We've got more coming your way as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
This is VFL Josh Malone, and it's just 3 days until it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com. Go on!
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Let's go back to the phones where it's Alan who's up next. Hello, Alan.
Hey, guys. It's football time in Tennessee.
It sure is. How are you?
I love it. Yeah, I love it. I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. I'm getting excited. I've been negative Nelly all summer just so I didn't get my hopes up. So, but anyway, hey, both of you, just a little COVID strategy talk. I don't think you tell me. Did the ACC ever set a set of rules like the 53 players, four linemen, one quarterback, yada yada?
If they did, I didn't see it.
Yeah,
I'm with you. I don't think they did. And so Notre Dame on Monday, I believe, or maybe it was yesterday, said they can't play this week, right?
Yeah, they're not playing Wake Forest, correct?
Right. But they played Saturday against, was it South Florida?
Yes.
Yeah. So I wonder if somebody tested positive on Sunday or Monday, you got to ask yourself, were they in the game? Were they a running back? Did the South Florida players tackle that person a bunch? And so I guess my hypothesis is this, is that as we've gotten to the season, coaches – and administrators are going to be less and less agreeable to quarantining somebody. And, you know, there's a lot of judgment in that, right? 15 minutes within 6 feet, you know. And my guess is that early, you know, starting in June, they were probably real quick to quarantine people. I wish they'd share the data. I'd be curious. I have no idea. But for the sake of argument, let's say 19 out of every 20 people they quarantined never got COVID. So now they're thinking, do I want to quarantine 20 people for this game when it's going to turn out that zero, one, or two of them had it? And I can't blame them. I'm not criticizing, actually. So I think that's going to – early on, that probably will keep a lot of teams from not – from having to say they can't play. Now, they're rolling the dice a little, right? If that one or two people with it do play that turn out to have it later, do play, then eventually you could get – I don't know what's going on at Notre Dame where you say I can't play because X number of people actually have tested positive. So, I don't know. You guys think anything along those lines, or what are your thoughts?
Well, the here's what I was told by somebody at UT, that the health department handles a lot of that with the contact tracing. I don't know all the things that they go through to do that, but I'm told that they handle that, so it's not up to the school. So I'm really not sure about some of them trying to manipulate and set their own numbers in that regard, Alan.
Well, that's a good point. But, of course, and that's probably wise, really, to have the health department do it. But what's the health department going to do? They're going to call and say, Joe, football player, you've tested positive. Were you in 6 feet of somebody for 15 minutes in the last few days? Well, now that person's got – I mean, if you went to practice and hit a sled, you know, how would they even answer it? I don't know. But anyway, we'll see. I'm glad we're having football. I hope we keep going. I hope I lose my bet to you, Jimmy, and have to buy you lunch at Long's. Where, as it's heading right now, it's going to be close, right, because a lot of teams aren't playing. But I'm just
glad
we got football.
What was our bet? I forgot.
And,
was it number of games for Tennessee or what?
No, it was number of Division 1A games, and I roughly said half. I actually did math in your error in your favor, and we said – I said 700, but that was per – I said if you multiply every team, you know, times 12 times the number of teams. So that means when Tennessee plays South Carolina, that's actually two games because there's a game on Tennessee's schedule – in a game on South Carolina. So there's been 26 so far, not that I'm counting.
26 games that were...
There's only been 13 games that I could find, but I counted them twice because, you know, they're on each team's schedule. And so we can think of it as 350 actual games if you want to do it that way.
And this is Division I.
Division 1A, yep. 1A, yeah. Just 1A, not 1AA. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I'll do all the accounting.
Bet.
You can trust me.
you didn't know this, but I just took over for the health department, so you're going to lose this bet.
Well, it's the bet I've most want to lose because that means we'll have football. I still get to have lunch with you. I just have to
there
pay. So no big deal. Hey, I will – just one quick whine, and I'll get off. This is kind of interesting in some sense. I did not get season tickets. I asked to get them, which means they don't know how important I am. I must be too far down on the giving generosity list. But I got an email, I guess it was Monday, that said, hey, you want any single-game tickets? And I thought, right. Well, I'll get what I can get. I got every game.
Yes.
So how do you get every game in a single game ticket and not season?
I can explain that. I had something on that last week, and I had actually gotten a letter that was sent to me in regard to that. So what happened was if you were a donor and a season ticket holder, you should have been able to get a season ticket. But when they were unable to fill out the entire allotment, which was like 22,000 to 24,000 season tickets, What they did was they decided to offer it individual game tickets to non-season ticket donors. Now, why did they do that? Because they had, I was told they had roughly 3,000 tickets available, but they had more season ticket holders that were non-donors that wanted them. So they did not want to offer any more season tickets to non-donor season ticket holders because they would have had more requests than what their allotment was. So they decided to offer single game tickets. That's how that happened. That makes sense?
There was too many double negatives in there, non-donors, seat holders. I'm not sure if it makes sense. I mean, been a season ticket holder since 1965 and have donated. But let's just say I'm probably not high on the list, but I don't have my tickets free of donation.
Well, that interests me because I was told that they had gone through the list, and if anybody that was a donor, then they went to the non-donor season ticket holders. That's what I was told.
Huh. Well, so. I'll give you more detail offline if you're curious.
Okay, sounds good. Okay.
Take care, buddy.
Thanks, Alan.
Appreciate it, Alan. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to hour number three of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.
The king of beer, the king of sports. Live from the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Radio WNML.
Final segment to hour number three of Sports Talk with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We go back to the phones to catch up with Fred. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Fred.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, you know what I'd like to do? I would like, boy, if I were president of the United States, seriously. But you know what? I tell you, everybody this year needs to just give everybody else in the world a mulligan. And here's my point. Any player that is eligible to play college football without breaking the law of the land, put his butt in a uniform. I don't care if he plays for Alabama, Georgia, Florida. Do it. I'm thinking about Cade Mays for us, but this applies to many schools across the land. Put his butt in a uniform, have him eligible, and keep him separated from his position group as much as you can. There needs to be some players available this year to get some seasons off. I'm talking about SEC, ACC, whoever. All of them. Get the players. I mean, it's not time for the NCAA or these commissioners like Sankey to be holding out on players. We got to have players available.
Well, let me say this. He's following the rules that were set up by the SEC. The athletic directors, chancellors, all voted on having this particular way.
Well,
hold on, Fred. Let me finish. Fred.
I know. Okay.
Let me finish. So that's the rule, and the amendment 2 years ago was that if they can transfer and be eligible if there's a postseason ban. That was one of the criteria that was out there for them to be able to be eligible. And so he thinks if they want to change it, then they need to vote a change. But here's the other part, and I think it gets back to what you're saying. This is an unusual time, unusual situation. I'm with you. I think they should let Cade Mays play, Joey Gatewood play Kentucky, Otis Reese play at Ole Miss. I think they ought to let everybody play. So I'm in agreement with you, but I'm just saying that Sankey is following, at this point, he's just following the rules established by the SEC. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, it just seems so stupid, the situation our country's in, that we can't get players in uniforms. I mean, I'm not talking about Tennessee. I'm talking about everybody.
I got you. Yeah.
All right. Good show, guys. I'm enjoying it. Thank you.
All right. Sure do appreciate it, Fred. I'll say this. I do think that because this is a special circumstance kind of season, that unless there is something that is beyond out of sorts with somebody's leaving a school. For instance, Brian Rice was talking this morning about a player that had transferred already once to another school prior to leaving that school, his new school, to come to South Carolina. He was not granted a waiver. So if you're transferring twice within the same calendar year, I can understand that. I just think, though, that Fred, his main point is one that I do agree with, that unless there's just something totally out of sorts with how one player landed at one from school A to school B, I don't know why you wouldn't just rubber stamp it. Even if in 2021 you might say, as commissioner of your particular conference, I would not approve these future transfers, I realize that that's kind of saying, okay, it's a special circumstance and you can't get the toothpaste back in the tube. The expectation obviously would be, well, you let these guys play immediately last year. I understand that part, but I think that you would have free rein to say, you know what, it was COVID. It was there was absolutely no reason to keep these players off the field because they were ready to play, their teams were ready to play, so we let them play this year, knowing that in the future we may, in all likelihood, make them sit a year as opposed to being able to transfer without being a graduate transfer within the conference.
Well, I don't disagree with that. The other thing from Sankey that's interesting, I asked him if he has granted any waivers in the past, and he said yes. He said, but go look it up on Google. Well, here's where I have to scold myself. I should have been more specific with the question, because since 2018, if you're a grad transfer or your school is as a postseason ban, then you get the waiver. So my question should have been, since 2018 and this amendment was enacted, have you granted a waiver? But I just asked him if he had done it as a commissioner. So he could have very well given a waiver on a grad transfer or a postseason ban. So I don't know. I'll say this. I am not nearly as optimistic right now with Cade Mays getting granted eligibility as I have been all along, because in listening to what Greg Sankey said, I don't think he would have gone to the great lengths to explain all the rules of the SEC and how basically if you want to get a waiver, then you don't need to ask for a waiver. You need to change the rules. That makes me think he's not going to grant eligibility for Mays, Gatewood, or Reese. That's the way I interpret it. I may be wrong, but I am not optimistic now about Cade Mays.
That would be really a shame if that goes, simply for the fact that, as I just said, with the special circumstance that is this season, I just think that there are some things that need to be waived and done so with the notion. You can even make the announcement that if it weren't the situation that we're facing right now, this wouldn't happen. But this year, because it's a year that doesn't count against you eligibility-wise, I just think that they need to make an exception, because we know that the rule book for the game itself has a boatload of exceptions, and this should be yes. The same way.
I agree.
Yeah. But what we will do now is get a break. When we return, hour number four of Sports Talk, we look forward to bringing you a Tennessee football practice report with Eric Kane. We also have a Tennessee baseball coach, Tony Vitello, who's going to jump on board with us. And up next, it's your chance to win with the Sports Fix at 6. Stay with us on 99.1, The Sports Animal.